You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to episode 82 of District of Conservation. This is your host, Gabriella Hoffman. Pardon the absence last week. I had a lot on my plate as it related to client work and adjusting to my new writing home, which is where you can find a lot of my conservation-based writing, and that is townhall.com, which is one of the leading conservative news outlets out there. And for those of you who don't know, I actually used to write for them casually in the past, but recently came on in a more formal capacity as a freelance columnist with them. So I've written about 4 columns with them so far. I've talked a lot about firearms and other different niche topics, but my upcoming column this Friday is going to be centered on why more people are picking up hunting under this pandemic. So you're going to definitely want to look out for that. I speak to a lot of experts. I spoke to a few people at different wildlife agencies, TV programs, social media influencers that are serious, and others to get insight as to why that is happening. But that's kind of what has been keeping me busy recently. But for today's interview, I wanted to bring my dad back on again because the first time I brought him, it was a great episode, but we had audio issues on his end. I still haven't figured out how to configure my 2 microphones because I have an Audio Technica, which I use to record this. Then I have another one, and I feel like I made the wrong type of investment for that, so I may get a second Audio Technica. The second time, you could hear my dad well and not me. Now I think third time is a charm, but he has an update as to his hunting journey. He talks about what led him to hunt at his age, because most people in his age group are aging out of hunting, and people are trying to target millennials more so, but my dad has some interesting insights. He talks a little bit about living in the old country, why he likes preparing meat, why he's looking forward to going out into the field, and so much more. So I think you're going to enjoy hearing from my dad again, if you hadn't heard from him before. So here is an update from my dad. Dad, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast to share your announcement. Are you excited to share it with my listeners?
Absolutely.
All right. So what did you do recently?
Well, finally, I found some time, thanks to COVID-19. Just kidding. Found some time to complete the Young Hunters course. So I did it, and it actually was very entertaining, and a lot of knowledge passed on to people who actually want to do it. It gives you a lot of tips on safety and how to handle guns and what kind of a guns, and you know, and the whole kind of safety issues with stands and clothing during the hunting. And so it was very interesting, and it's actually very helpful. So I'm happy and ready to go.
Excellent. So you took the International Hunter Education Association course, the online course, yes?
Yes.
Obviously, because you can't Absolutely. Take it in person.
No.
And what did you like about that compared to like a traditional setting of learning? I mean, you still have to go to the field, and we're going to do that this fall. But
well, you know, it actually, that whole website is very nice, and we have visual and audio questions and video and explains everything in a simple manner so any person can understand. And we have quizzes, and at the end, the chapter number 11, it's a big kind of a test, and they give you the whole reviews and teaches you how to notice what's wrong, what's not, and asks questions about that. And at the end of a whole big 11 chapter, you have a quiz. And, you know, and you have to pass certain amount of percentage in each one chapter. And if you don't, for some reason, you can take it again. And, you know, usually the second time you pass. So I probably had, what, 3 I kind of couldn't do well. I mean, I was like 90%, I think. And I retook it and was fine. So it's actually kind of gives you a lot of knowledge and helps you to figure out what to do, at least theoretically. I actually was hunting 40 years ago in November
of 1980. To refresh my listeners on
who missed
the two past episodes with you.
Yeah, I went to visit my future brother-in-law in 1980. I think it was right before that. It was Halloween night, 31 of October, 1980. And he lived in that very beautiful Lithuanian area called Neringa, which is like a peninsula which connects, we call it now Kaliningrad, but actually it used to be a capital of East Prussia called Königsberg. So half of that peninsula belongs to Soviet Union and half of it belongs to Lithuania. It's a beautiful thing. I think it's about, maybe maximum 80 miles, maybe less. And it used to be a fishing village out there. And there are some people who fish commercially still. I think the population of Lithuanian part, it's about 2,500 people. And during the summer and when it's nice, people go vacationing there. Because on one side of that peninsula, you can go and fish in that, they call it harbor, Kurshuk Harbor. And I was on the right side, when you go there, it's Baltic Sea. So you can have the best of both worlds. And actually used to be like just like a sandbar and some very famous Lithuanian, I think he was a Lutheran monk or priest. He actually had an idea to plant like pine trees, and they took off, and that's why it's a whole thing exists, to keep the sandbar alive. And I forgot his last name. I think he has like some kind of a German last name.
But anyway, was it good environment for animals?
It's a national park.
Right. I remember you told me this.
Yeah, it's a national park.
But explain to my listeners.
We have a lot of wild hogs, especially recently. When it's like not enough food, they go and beg food from people who live there. And we have moose there, and we have a lot of deer and rabbits, and pretty much, I don't know about the wolves, but maybe foxes. So it's a beautiful place, and, you know, a lot of mushroom and good mushroom and a lot of berries, blueberries and strawberries. Well, strawberries, just a gorgeous place. Summertime, it's the best place vacation in Lithuania. Plus, we had a camp, I think, for like wood carving artists for a few years in a row. I'm not sure because I left almost 35 years ago. And it happened before I left. So we had very talented Lithuanian wood carvers who created, like, we call that place Witch Mountain. And it's a beautiful collection of Norse and Lithuanian pagan fairy tales about dragons and dwarves. And they built benches. You can go online and check it out, Neringa's Witch Mountain.
You took us there.
We have pictures.
20 years ago.
And videos, I guess, somewhere. So it's a beautiful place, and we have dragons and devils and storytellers. It's a beautiful place to vacation. So, you know, we went hunting, even though it was a national park, because my brother-in-law at the time was the chief of police there. So we went hunting. Him, his subordinate was a big guy. His name was Polinaras, very famous guy, actually. We made a documentary about him. The guy's son and me. And we went hunting, and the first night, I think, they harvested a hare. I was helping. I was a novice.
So you didn't take the kill shot. You were just there to...
No, I was just to help
to
and learn.
Learn,
yeah. So and so I think the first night we harvested the wild hare and a hog. It was delicious. So and the next day, I think I was there for a few days. It was kind of a long weekend, so... and it was winter time already, snowy out there. It wasn't very cold, but cold enough. So we dressed up well and went hunting, and we encountered a moose. I think it was female moose because it didn't have any antlers. And they harvested it, and we made about 250 sticks of sausage. I helped to, you know, dress it, and I was lucky. I got a pelt, so I took that heavy, wet pelt, wrapped it into that kind of a plastic bag, and we lived about 200 miles away from that area, so we put it on the public bus in the storage under the cabin, and I took it home. And after that, I couldn't find anybody to tend it, so I gave it to a friend of mine who lived in our one beautiful place. first capital of Lithuania called Trakai, and he had a house there, so he did something with it, I don't know. So, but it was a beautiful experience, you know, and that making sausage was, boy, oh boy, oh boy. And my wife at the end, girlfriend at the time, future wife at the end, she couldn't stand to be in that room because it was a smell of that, because that moose actually has a very lean venison, so we had to buy a lot of pork fat and a little bit of pork meat. And we grind everything up, mixed it up, and I don't think we had any really tools to do that, probably a grinder. But we did a lot of handwork and out of the stuffed fat casings, and boy, that sausage was, and smoked it, it was delicious.
You always tell me about this, and I haven't had, I think we've had moose maybe somewhere. But yeah, that was your first experience. But
yeah.
What led you to do it almost 40 years later here in the States?
Well, you know, I mean, it's
why just, did it take you so long to do it?
Well, you know, when you come to this country, you have to put your roots down, produce kids,
sure,
and establish yourself. I have a business to run. So finally, you know, I always wanted to go hunting, but I was always busy. So finally, when that pandemic hit us, so it was, I had a lot of time on my hand, even though I'm still working across the street for neighbors, building some stuff. So I did it, and it didn't take very long. I think it took me maybe 8 hours, give or take.
Across 3 days?
Right? Yeah, 3 days plus one night I nailed the last chapter because it was like 18 pages or something, so I didn't want to go crazy with it. So it was easy. So I want to go hunting, you know, maybe harvest some venison, and if we get lucky, maybe we can harvest a bear.
Down the road, yeah. We have a lot in Virginia, for those of you who don't know.
I think everybody, every hunter, if we have bears in the area, and it's a, you know, you can buy a tag to harvest it, should at least have one bear in a lifetime. You don't need to kill all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I think a few years ago, we had that info on Virginia Wildlife website that way people harvested about 2,500 bears. I think the population of bears in this state is about 18 or 20,000 bears. So it's nothing wrong with that. So I want to get more into that nature.
I always see there's 17,000, but close.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
close to 20,000.
I wasn't counting. No. They did. So I grew up, actually, I think since I was 5, I got very curious about fishing and start hanging around people who did that. My parents used to rent a couple of rooms on the outskirts of a city on a riverbank, and I loved it. So I think around 5, so I started asking them questions, and they made some primitive fishing tackle, and, you know, and I was catching fish, and it was beautiful. And I got older, we used to go to that place anyway, so I started making my own fishing rods, because we didn't have nothing in Lithuania, just the rods themselves. I couldn't make a reel. So it's a fascinating thing. It teaches you how to be patient and enjoy nature and respect. You don't catch and keep all fish. You just keep what you need to, and it has to be a certain size. And hunting
in
is
season even, too. Can't
yes,
season.
Absolutely. But hunting is even better because you see the nature, you see that wild animal, and you see the habitat, you see the birds, and, you know, there are rules, thanks God, and regulations, what to take, what not, and when. So that kind of keeps that wildlife alive and procreating and keeps people busy. And, you know, plus we buy licenses, tags, and we actually, I don't know if people know or not, most people, but we are the ones, people who hunt and fish, we actually provide money for conservation and preservation. So if it wouldn't be for us, we would have bison problem because of all extinct. But because of people hunting and fishing all around the country, we actually subsidize that whole thing. And we enjoy it, too.
It's the only good subsidization, I think,
it's
the government.
Yeah, actually, subsidies should be only one type, voluntarily by people who want to join
a
club. So it's like hunting club and fishing club. It's a club, but nobody forces you to do it.
Yeah, excise taxes.
You join
taxes.
Voluntarily.
Yeah. You pay through excise taxes, this which is, are very different than income and other
types. This is great. I mean, I love it, so I want to be there, plus hang out with my daughter, if I can, in action,
yes.
You know, and bring some fresh meat home. It's nothing wrong with that, and maybe get some antlers. I used to make
shed hunts.
Yeah.
We haven't been able to do that.
I used to, as funny as it sounds, I used to make knives well, not like big hunting knives, but we had a metal shop in middle school and a wood shop, and I learned how to do a lot of things. So I used to make knives and hammerheads, and I used to actually make out of a, I used to get some antler sheds from some people, and sometimes you go to swap meet and people had them, I would buy them, and I would make some handles. I love that stuff. It's fun, and it actually, it's kind of skillful, plus, you know, you make something on your own, it's great. You know, that's what people should do. They should polish their skills and learn stuff so they can do themselves and be independent.
I mean, you've taught me everything I know about fishing. I have had to rely on you in the past a lot, but I'm slowly reeling away
it's about time.
But it's funny because we both got our concealed handgun permits together out of my insistence, and you wanted to do it. And I'm glad we did it 5 years ago after they started to change laws here. So we got that done, nailed it, just renewed it. And then when I started to hunt, you expressed interest in doing it too.
Absolutely.
I mean, because it's not something completely foreign to you because you've done it a little bit in Lithuania, tagged along. And we did actually, our first hunting trip in the United States together wasn't really hunting, but it was that rabbit hunting event we went to in Maryland.
Yeah.
Fox hunting, I think that's what it was. With beagles.
With beagles, yeah.
I'm sorry, we went beagling with a neighbor.
Plus, back in Lithuania, before I came here, we used to go a lot of berry hunting. Like, we used to go for wild raspberries and blueberries and strawberries and other berries, which are available, and lingonberries, actually, believe it or not, in Lithuania, where areas you can get that. And some... some other berries, I forgot what the name.
But also mushrooms.
Mushroom, yeah. My main thing was...
your favorite thing.
It was, it was mushroom hunting. We had porcinis, we had shiitakes, we had some porcini type kind of things, and some years were unbelievably fruitful. We had, and I think my parents started drugging us. I remember myself about 5, 6 when we started, all three of us, my two siblings, and my mom and dad, we used to go and we used to take a train because we didn't have a car, or my mom's work, we used to provide 3 trucks and we would pack like trucks, covers, huge trucks, and or sometimes buses, and we would pack probably 100 people and we would go to certain areas and we knew our mushrooms and we had a blast because everybody would have a potluck lunch and, you know, you interact, you see the nature. Sometimes you would see some deer and some maybe foxes and hawks. So it was beautiful. That's how I got into that because I feel like at home in the nature. I mean, and I don't need any compasses to navigate. I was, I guess, blessed. So I can get out of any forest you want, even if I haven't been there before. I don't know why, but it is what it is. So I love the nature. Nature is great. Everybody should take their kids to the nature. And I used to go camping too. It was beautiful.
I haven't really gone camping much in this area since we moved here. It's hard to go camping. All of us are working.
Yeah, well,
I mean, we're growing up.
Yeah, but we went to it. We camped in
Yellowstone
National
and
Park.
Bryce.
Bryce.
Kern River Valley. I think those are the three camping trips.
Yeah, so we actually saw some, a deer came to our tent and was drinking water from the tap. So,
that was at Bryce. I remember that.
And actually we came to that Yellowstone kind of late at night and we built the tent quickly. Turn on headlights of our, at the time, car was, I think, Odyssey. And girls helped me out. We built it up. We started a fire. On the way to that camp, we found some huge porcini mushrooms. So we cooked it, part of it, and we made some food. I think you girls loved it. It was an adventure. Plus, and later on, we heard that United Choir of Wolves of Yellowstone. It was a beautiful howling out there each one night.
We didn't see any, but we did hear them from the distance.
No, but, you know, it's fine. But it's beautiful out there. People should go and spend more time outdoor because everybody's at home all the time. But if you don't take your kids out, we don't know what's going on out there. Plus, on the way back, we stopped in that bear and wild animal refuge.
Yellowstone Bear World?
Yeah.
In Rexburg, Idaho.
Yeah, in Idaho. And also I wanted my daughters to see how that wheat grows and potatoes grow. So we stopped by a few fields and I showed them what it is. So everybody should know, potato doesn't come from the supermarket. It winds up there. And bread that grain doesn't grow in the bakery. It gets there. So it's important to know what's surrounding you and have a reality touch with the nature so you know and you appreciate it more. So you don't pollute, you don't trash, you kind of preserve the area of habitat of yours. Mm-hmm. So that's where I stand.
Mm-hmm. So at your age, I mean, you're over 65, which is not the target demographic people are trying to target in the outdoor industry. They're really going for people my age. But, you know, as baby boomers like yourself age out, what do you have in terms of encouragement for people who may be your age and advice for them if they want to go hunting too? Because it doesn't matter what age you should be.
It has nothing to do with age. By the way, if somebody is kind of afraid to harvest animals, they can pass that, beginner's exam, get a license, and if you don't want to do anything, just go hang out, see how it works. Plus, for a lot of people who are afraid of guns because they don't know how it works.
Right.
They don't know what guns are all about. And, you know, they could learn safety, and it would prevent some misunderstandings and false premises of all that arm business. Because, you know, nobody makes arms to, like, especially hunting, rifles are not for killing people. It's for hunting.
Unless you listen to former Vice President Joe Biden shooting shotguns through
this
doors.
This guy is definitely a hunting jewel.
He's not a friend to the to our
we
kind.
We don't know. Nobody, I think I don't want to
get... You don't want to listen to his advice.
Too deep into his hunting boots. But I think he lives in a different forest.
Yes. We'll leave it at that.
Yes.
But back to that. But I think most people are trying to get younger people like me to go hunting. I guess I'm the intended. People my age are the intended target. But I think everyone, people who are a little younger than you, people who are my age, even younger, there's a benefit. And we see people learning how to go hunting, and you've heard the reports. I've told you some stuff that people are buying more hunting licenses. I've spoken to a few wildlife agencies about this, and they've confirmed that too, that people of all different ages are starting to do that because they're worried about meat shortages. They're worried about not being able to go outside, and going outside allows them to relieve stress and social distance and do all these measures. Being outdoors, you already inherently know how to do that.
I think it'll actually, that whole hunting with your children and grandchildren actually, and fishing too, would actually make the family ties stronger. Because what I noticed, that link between the grandparents and parents, grandchildren and grandparents kind of broken, and I think it's on purpose. So when people don't see the grandparents, they don't want to see them, and they look on them down, especially if they're military or something, and it's a very strange phenomena. This country was built on people who would actually, family used to live in the same house for hundreds of years. Because, and they would get married if nobody had any money, so would stay in the same house, and the grandchildren would help farming and hunting and trapping. And the country morals were good. Well, nothing perfect in life, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a different, totally different kind of a setup. And thanks to all these crazy people who call themselves progressives, they ruined it. They put restrictions, you cannot do that, and cannot do this. And some famous environmentalists said that you know better about this stuff than your parents and grandparents. Go talk to them. Everybody knows who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
Mr. Vice President, and now one brilliant guy. You know, Al Jazeera member, Salesforce. You know, the guy who sold his channel, worthless channel, to Al Jazeera.
Al Gore, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You know, so, you know, that's what it is. And that whole propaganda kills the whole thing. People have no ties. It's amazing what people call their parents three times a year, which is ridiculous. And even if I live in the same state and driving distance, I don't see them. It's really strange.
We're not like that, though. We're an unusual family.
We are a usual family because we come from a different kind of a background.
Stock. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I mean, but you always use nature, especially with me, like maybe because I was able to bond with you. And I bond with Mom in different ways, but I was able to spend time with you growing up and even today through nature.
Well, your sister went fishing with us too sometimes, but not everybody is interested in the same thing.
No.
It's normal. You know, but it's a great time to be on a pond or river or lake or go to the ocean fishing on a charter boat and enjoy it. And people say, well, it's not the most important thing to catch. Well, you know, it's a reward. It shows, especially fishing, especially in the streams. If you don't have skills, you cannot catch anything. Very rarely you can catch something by accident. So it sharpens your skills. It teaches you you know, how to learn about nature and streams and what's going on, how to catch, what lures to use. The same thing is hunting. You know, you go there and you learn how to follow the animals and, you know, animals' footprints, and you can figure out who is who. And so occasionally you may see a lynx or something else, which is very cool too. It's nothing wrong with that.
We saw a bear on the way to the now closed fishing pond in Sperryville, Virginia. We saw a yearling. I didn't have my glasses, and you still get under my skin for this. You say you could have seen it better.
It was a beautiful yearling bear. He was crossing the road, and everybody stopped.
Just outside Warrenton.
Yeah, everybody respectfully stopped to let the young animal go, and he just jumped on that divider, wooded part of a divider, and after that, I don't know, we didn't see him because the opposite side of a road was, highway was kind of lower, so I guess he made it safely.
He hid somewhere.
Yeah, so that's amazing. You can see bears here.
Yeah.
You know, in California, close. Where we used to live, people have bears in the backyards in Pasadena.
In hot tubs.
Altadena, and any way you want.
Yeah,
so.
We didn't see any in the wild, I don't remember, except for the zoo.
Yeah,
but we had
mountain lions walking on this golf course in Cota de Casa where we used to live. And
in elementary school, I remember we had to have it shut down because of lynx. Now, there's some...
We used to see some coyotes walking on the streets in our neighborhood in Kite Hill and Laguna Niguel. We saw them during the daytime. And
we see a lot of cool nature stuff even here in Virginia.
Yeah.
I would say more.
Yeah, well, it's not a such desert state, so there is more
lush
food and lush for animals. So we have deer coming to our backyard. And sometimes we have a dozen or more.
Yeah. We haven't seen that many recently, but we also have seen Virginia's elk herd. I don't know if we talked about it in the last two episodes, but you really loved seeing the elk herd with me in Virginia.
We loved it. It was great. We took some pictures and you did some interviewing and riding around to that retired veterinarian in that ATV. And I used my God-given skills to help to build some
observatory. You were like the lead contractor for the shelters.
I was a regular carpenter. So I didn't want to stick out. So I had a lot of my cordless tools in my truck bed. And we had young people and not young people to help. And I mean, I loved doing it. We built a big kind of a deck platform. It wasn't finished. We put that finish board and we built some railings. Sections. It was great. Everybody loved it. And people in that area of Southwest Virginia are great. They were the greatest people. They were coal miners and just big-hearted, welcoming people. We loved that thing. It was great. And seeing so many elk at the time, and I actually put one of that pictures on my cell phone.
Yeah, you have it as your background image.
As a background, so I love that stuff. So hopefully maybe...
In a few years' time, we can hunt them?
Yeah, we'll go back and maybe hunt them. But if we don't, we don't. It's not all about killing or hunting.
No, just to see them, I think.
It's a long time, kind of a trip. It's 8 hours, give or take.
No, it's 7 or 6.
Whatever it is. But it's not like you're going to Chesapeake Bay
or going to
Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different type kind of adventure. So you cannot go and come back in the same day. So you have to probably have a
weekend. We did that.
Yeah, 3-4 days. That was the best. So you can enjoy and relax and see more. They told us stories about excellent fishing in the area, but it was like an hour or two away. So, you know, maybe next time we'll go bring fishing rods and, you know, get to talk to people and maybe we'll take a third fish too because this is a great trout and great carp and different kind of fish. So that would be a... Double header.
Yes. What's on our radar for fishing once we are freed? I think we have less than 2 weeks now.
Well, we don't know.
I mean, we can. For people listening, we can technically go fishing, but it's very ambiguous because some county state parks are closed. And one of our favorite places to go fishing, Burke Lake, here in Fairfax County, it's closed until reopening.
Well, we'll wait, and we have an inflatable big boat.
But the rest of the state, it should be known.
Well,
they reopened some charters. Much of fishing is still accessible, but there's still some challenges for
NOVA. We'll see what we can do as soon as we'll be free again. We're going to go maybe to Maryland, trout fishing, or maybe we'll go locally somewhere here. We'll go definitely somewhere because my hands are itchy. it's time to go. I mean, usually we start early.
Yeah.
And enjoy.
We missed much of the trout season this season, yeah, because this started in right after my birthday in mid-March. And
well, we know everybody knows what happened. We have somebody to blame, but there is nothing that we can do today. We have to deal with it, get through it, and get back to business.
And nature shouldn't be the obstacle. Nature should be the antidote. People should be going outdoors. But well, what species do you think we want to target?
Well, we probably will target Covey if we can. We will.
Oh, when we go down.
Yeah, we go down Chesapeake Bay, maybe Virginia Beach. We'll get some flounder. We'll see what's available.
Well, we're going to do some saltwater species, yeah, targeting later
this
summer.
It would be nice to catch some muskie / pike. I used to do it back in old country. So I know how to handle it and other things, you know.
And we'll use some outdoor access properties,
yeah,
likely?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to go wherever we can as often as we can, mm-hmm, because we need to recharge the batteries.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yes. And then do we have a planned, hopefully, I mean, we talked about it last time you were on the podcast, but we really do want to go get steelhead in the Lake Erie portion of Pennsylvania through the outdoor access property.
Yeah, we just need to book it. We need to check with the owner, see what's going on, get any information from what we need to
buy the licenses.
Yeah, buy the license, that's the easiest thing. Mm-hmm. Money spending is the easiest thing in the world. and you know, drive there. You know, it's a big deal. Maybe we'll bring somebody with us. It depends. But it's definitely, it's the shortest trip to go steelhead fishing, because, you know, anywhere else you have to go to Washington State, even though we have a place to stay there.
It's a bit of a hike.
But it's a heck of a fly.
To get a purely salmonoid fish.
Yeah, yeah. But
this is the closest. Atlantic salmon, yeah.
This is good. So if we go over we saw some videos. It's a shallow kind of a river creek. So
it's a beautiful landscape, actually. I think it's limestone.
I don't know.
Limestone is pretty good for trout and steelhead.
Whatever it is. So, you know, we're going to do what we can to catch some fish and, yeah, hopefully bring some home and maybe smoke it here.
Yeah. And we'll try to document it on videos. I think, yep, people have asked me to use my new fancy camera, yep, to do that. So we'll try to record our fishing adventures for,
yeah,
people.
Yeah, it would be nice. We'll. I mean, we can do it if we don't hook fish at the same time.
I can film and I can have you narrate. We can have it standalone. We'll figure,
yeah,
it out when
we'll
get there.
But we'll see. But we have.
But I think it'd be good to record and just showcase kind of what we do, kind of a behind the scenes look at how we go fishing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And other stuff.
Absolutely, we'll definitely allowing our schedules and work, we'll definitely,
right,
planning to do that, because,
yes,
that's what we do.
And we'll chronicle your first hunting trips.
Absolutely.
If we can get to the field. I don't know if we're going to begin with deer first. I think you should try upland.
We will see what's available.
Yes.
There's no rush on it.
Exactly. Now, you just ordered a batch of High Mountain seasonings, right?
Yep.
And we had learned about them. I'd heard it from several friends, like my friend Ken Perrott. And also we were watching Scott Laiseth's show, The Sporting,
yep,
Chef. And so you saw it.
Yeah.
And what are you hoping to make out of it? Because you love meat. Everyone knows you're a meat eater.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with loving meat. So we're going to, based upon that Scott Laiseth's advice, apparently you can make your own beef jerky in your own oven. It's very easy. He has that episode when he talks about that. So we're going to... If we don't have any venison, so we're going to get some nice piece of beef. And
if they still have beef.
Well, we'll have beef. It's plenty of beef. And we'll slice it and use that, seasoning. And based upon his advice, we'll do it in that oven. I mean, so it's nothing wrong to try. Plus, you know, we don't want to buy that dehydrator.
No.
Because it's not worth it. I have an electrical smoker, so maybe we can use that for that, put it on a very low temperature and go slow, because the smoke we can make beef jerky semi-smoked. And I have a bunch of different type of wood for flavoring, you know, so it's not a problem. We'll do something. Absolutely.
That's good. I'm excited. Do you have any final things you want to say? Because we've covered a hodgepodge of different issues. You provided everyone an update on your hunting journey, what you're looking forward to. Is there anything else? Do you want to plug in your business for those who may be local?
I don't know. I mean,
people may be short on funds, but people are always looking for projects.
I usually, you know me, and I mean it, I don't mix business and pleasure. But if anybody is, I would say, 25 miles radius away from George Washington Estates, in Virginia, that's my working radius. I can help. So if you want to see what I do, go on my website, balticconstruction.net, and you can see what I do, and I've been doing it for a while.
Beautiful.
Right. That's it.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Dad, for coming on and sharing your nice update.
You're very well.
Please be sure to follow us on social media. If you're just discovering us, you can also subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and many other participating platforms. I think we're on close to 18. We're also on iHeartRadio and Overcast and just about anything you can think of. So we're pretty widely distributed, but my preferred platform for you all, and I think the bulk of my listeners tune in through Apple Podcasts. So if you want to leave us a review, that's the best place to do it. And if you like what you hear, you've liked this episode, you've listened to others, maybe Katie Pavlich's interview brought you to the podcast, go leave us a review. And we would really be appreciative of that. And download some past episodes. Encourage your friends to follow us, connect with us online, and to share upcoming episodes. If you have any suggestions on guests, I would love to hear them. I should be having a few more people come on. They're on my Rolodex, but there should be another episode, and we're going to resume the weekly schedule. I just needed a break to kind of collect my thoughts with more responsibilities coming in. But thank you for listening. Hope you liked this interview, and we'll see you next week.